is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network and DirecTV and cable systems nationwide via the Free Speech TV Network. Also on Progressive Voices, on TuneIn Radio, and a whole bunch of other places. Welcome to our program, and welcome to our first hour. It is Friday, so it's time for Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, the guy I think of as America's senator, although having been a Vermonter, I know how pleased they are that he's their senator. Sanders.senate.gov, the website. Senator, welcome. Hello?
Oh. Hey, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Okay.
So what's on your mind today? What do you see in the political activity of the week that...
Well, there's obviously a lot that's going on. One of the issues that came across my desk just the other day was a study from Citizens for Tax Justice, and they're a small group that does a great job year after year talking about the absurdities of our current tax system by which the rich and large corporations avoid paying their fair share of taxes. And what they did is they listed 10 corporate tax dodgers. Folks, huge corporations are making all kinds of profits who pay not only nothing in federal income tax, but in some cases they actually get rebates from the IRS. They mentioned Time Warner, a huge media giant, paid nothing in federal income taxes last year, but it did receive a rebate of $26 million, even though it made $4.3 billion in U.S. profits. Not too bad, right?
Wow.
They made $4.3 billion in profits, paid nothing in federal taxes, and they got a rebate of $26 million. CBS made $1.8 billion in U.S. profits last year and got a rebate from the IRS of $235 million. Xerox made $629 million in U.S. profits in 2014 but received a tax rebate of $16 million. They got Prudential Financial, Mattel, Priceline, Pacific Gas and Electric, General Electric. So you got all these major corporations who not only in a given year pay nothing in federal income tax, they actually get a rebate. Now, what I want to know, Tom, you're a media expert, you think CBS is going to have that on the CBS Nightly News tonight?
Somehow I doubt it. And I'd like to know how they do it.
You think they're going to have it?
I'm sorry. I was going to say.
They probably won't announce that they pay nothing in taxes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd love to know how they do it. I mean, this show is a small business, and if we show a profit, we pay tax.
Yeah, well, that's because you don't have 837 tax accountants and former IRS officials working for you, I guess.
Or foreign subsidiaries.
And that's right. You don't probably stash your money in the Cayman Islands, right?
Yeah.
Here's the issues. What I would like to talk about, I've been getting around the country a little bit. We're out in the West Coast. We had some great meetings in L.A. and San Francisco and Las Vegas and Austin and Chicago. And just last couple of days ago, I was in New York City and spoke to Al Sharpton's National Action Movement. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. And what I want listeners maybe to help us today in trying to figure out how we determine, in fact, what the major issues are facing this country. Now, that kind of seems like a silly question. But what you see is the media every single day tells us this is the issue of the day. But I find it amazing how often the media ignores what most people are really thinking about. So when you wake up in the morning and you say, okay, where should we as a nation be? What should the president, what should the Congress be talking about? What should they be addressing? And very often you turn on the TV and you don't hear anything about what those issues are. And it just seems to me we need more people to begin to stand up and say to the political world, say to the media world, excuse me, oh, that's, you know, what you're talking about is interesting or it's funny or it's entertaining. That's good. But it really is not the real issue. And so let me just throw out some. And I'd love to hear, you know, call a response to it. But you stop and you think, all right, I'm in the middle class or I'm in the working class in this country. What's the reality of my life? The reality is that everything being equal, I'm working longer hours for lower wages than was the case 20, 30, 40 years ago compared to another worker. Why is that? Sounds like a dumb question, a very simple question. What we have seen in the last many years is an explosion of technology, so that every worker out there is producing a lot more, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, Tom, you are dealing with a technology that was unheard of 20 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing what you can do now.
All right. And so in media, media world, your world, technology, my world, political world, as a United States senator, you know, we have technology now. We do emails in a way and use social media in a way no one ever dreamed of. Yet with all of the explosion of technology for virtually every type of work in America, where people are producing more, why are they earning less? Pretty simple question, right?
Yeah.
Why are people working longer hours for low wages? I'll never forget, you know, looking at textbooks that we all looked at when we were kids. And you see people in the trade union movement marching in demonstrations in 1905. You know what they said on their placards, on their posters?
What's that?
They said, give us the 40-hour work week. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
I mean, I wasn't
the early
there,
part of the 20th century, in 1900, 1910, workers were saying, we don't want to work 50 or 60 hours a week. We're human beings. We want time for our families. We want time for leisure. We want time for education. We don't want to be working our whole lives. And yet today in America, we have our people working almost, I think we used to work the longest hours of any people. I think maybe Japan or something surpassed us. It's unbelievable that you have people, millions of people in this country, working 50 or 60 hours a week. How did that happen? Well, they need to work those hours because the wages they're earning, the income they're earning, is insufficient. How did that happen? Is that an issue that you think, as a nation, might be on NBC News tonight? Might be. Should be. Will it be? Probably not. Question. Very simple question. So you're an ordinary person. You're working hard. You may be making less than you used to. You're worried about your kids doing even worse than you did economically. And yet, according to the reports that are out there, 99% of all new income being generated since the Wall Street crash of 2008, 99% is going to the top 1% of the American people. How's that happen? You think ABC will have a special on it tonight? Maybe. Probably not. What does that mean for the economy? What does it mean morally that we had a situation, and I think I've mentioned this on the show, we got hold of a Forbes report that's out there, and it said between the years 2013 and 2015, the wealth of the top 14 wealthiest people in this country, you know, that's Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and the Koch brothers and all these other guys, the wealth of the top 14 people, not 1,400, 14 people went up by $157 billion in a two-year period. That's the increase in their wealth. Increase in their wealth. That is more wealth than is owned by the bottom 40% of the American people. Now, what do you think? Is that an important issue? I think it's an extraordinary issue. I think it's an unbelievable issue. And it's not only a moral issue, it's an economic issue. Do you have a strong economy when so few have so much? Is the economy rigged? R-I-G-G-E-D. Rigged so that people working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, they're going nowhere in a hurry. And the top 14 people saw their wealth increase by $157 billion in a two-year period. That's pretty crazy stuff.
Mm.
All right. You have a situation, well, we go on and on, but I want people to, in fact, be talking about what are the real issues. And in many ways, they're not what the front pages of the newspapers tell us they are.
So, callers, in addition to the normal Friday questions, if they have suggestions for what the media should be talking about,
exactly,
what the real issues are, please call in. And
that would be a great...
Run those by Senator
great.
Sanders. Okay, you got it. We'll be right back. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. Back with your calls for Senator Sanders. Welcome back. And Senator Sanders on the line with us.
Right here.
Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. You are on the air. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Thanks for everything you do, both of you. I was... talking to a lot of voting citizens here in my town in Washington, and We would like to see a change in the process of legislation. And you know how amendments are added to bills at the last moment, possibly, or whenever, and they have nothing to do with the subject of the legislation.
It's called riders.
Can that be changed?
Can that be changed? Is that your question, Jackie?
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah. Thank you, Jackie.
The legislative process is different in the Senate than it is in the House, but they're both pretty crazy, and they're both pretty non-transparent. And one of the reasons for that is that I think if you really open the door to what goes on, people would see a lot of bad stuff happening, which the powers that be would prefer not to be seen. So I think Jackie raises one of the issues, and that's called riders, bills that have nothing to do with the main thrust of legislation being added on. And I think she's right, but I think we need to take a whole hard look at the entire legislative process, which is pretty screwed up, to be honest with you, Jackie. But you make a very good point. I think what I'd like to see is, you know, a bill being announced and having a lot of discussion on it, having the American people participating, if you like, or observing that discussion, and then voting on that issue. And Jackie is right. Sometimes the issue gets confused because very, very important riders become attached to the main bill.
Aaron, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Bowling Green, Ohio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. We have about 2 minutes, Aaron.
All right. First off, you were talking about very important issues, and you definitely are 100% correct on wealth, income, inequality. With my feeling, it also goes and ties into the economical issue with people working longer hours, not being able to have free time to do what they want, which actually would spur growth in the economy. But the main issue for me is I'm 27. I have a physical chronic pain condition, and the Republicans keep cutting more and more spending that would help me and spur the economy, and they're giving tax breaks to the rich. So my main question is, would you possibly invite some people from the church to talk about, because we do have a lot of religious people that are in Congress, have people in the church explain that this is the right thing to do and not give tax breaks to people who don't need it?
Well, Aaron, thanks very much for your good question. And I think what Aaron is referring to is that right now we have a Social Security deals obviously with retirement security for older people, but it also has a very significant program for the disabled, which the Republicans, in fact, are threatening to cut by 19% by not transferring money from one pot to the other, which has been done many, many times.
Going to pick this up on the other side of the break? Okay, we'll finish this in just a second. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie. Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie. Our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls. And
well, let's let Aaron ask a question, which we didn't fully answer.
Sure.
Aaron also raised the issue not only about the disability program, which we are fighting to make sure that there are not cuts in that program. Social Security today, the entire program combined, has something like $2.8 trillion in its trust fund, can pay out every benefit owed to every American for the next 18 years. I've introduced legislation which would expand benefits and extend the life of Social Security to the year 2065 by lifting the cap that currently exists, which is at $118,000. We would start at $250,000 and ask the wealthier people to start contributing their fair share. And Aaron also raises the question about, you know, religious folks in the Congress, and he's right. There are many people who talk a whole lot about religion. And I guess, you know, we can discuss what religious belief means. But to my mind, I think if you go back to the Bible and you look at the basic tenets of the Bible, which talks about doing unto others as you would like them to do unto you, which, you know, tells me that, you know, we would want people to treat ourselves and our kids in a way that we want to treat them in the way that they would treat us, that we take care of those people who are in need. I'm afraid that there are some folks who profess great religious adherence and yet are prepared to give huge tax breaks to billionaires and cut back on programs that, that poor people need and working people need. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but maybe they can explain it.
Jeanette in Spirit Lake, Idaho. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you so much. I wanted to address what Senator Sanders mentioned at the top, which was, you know, what we have is a very uneducated, uninformed public. And what I see that we need to address in a big way is how do we get the news stations to have to speak the truth? You know, we don't, I think if we should have a law or a referendum that says if you're going to call yourself news, you have to back up what you say with facts. I'm in an area that's very conservative, and I've listened to C-SPAN in the morning and then listened to the local news in the evening, and they've completely slanted what happened in Congress in an unfactual way. And how people don't know. People that I talk to, they have no, they're not listening to C-SPAN. People aren't listening, and people aren't informed, but we don't have any way that it really helps them to know what they're hearing is true.
Well, Jenna, thanks for raising what I think is, in fact, one of the most important issues. And that is, Jeanette, I think, was calling from Idaho?
Yes.
Yeah. And in Idaho and in many other conservative parts of the country, there are probably very, very few voices that present an anti-corporate, anti-Fox analysis of the world. And people just don't have another perspective. And when we look at media today, we're seeing quite significant concentration of ownership. And we're seeing that ownership, obviously, by large multinational corporations who have an agenda. And one of the issues that I will be dealing with is how we have a more diverse level of ownership. We used to have a time when we had small companies owning radio stations. What's the story with Clear Channel now, Tom? How many stations do they own?
I don't know anymore. It used to be over 1,000.
All right. So you have, you know, a few huge companies owning major, many, many radio stations. And it's corporate control pretty much down the line. And how we address that issue is extremely important, Jeff. So thanks very much. I think that's a great question.
Jake in Athens, Georgia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Senator Sanders. I have two quick things. First of all, I represent a activist organization in Athens called Athens for Everyone, and we're very excited about the possibility of your campaign, and we're all ready to go out to South Carolina and knock on doors for you. So we'd love for you to announce. Second thing, a question for you, is one thing I really think the media could improve on that really needs to change is we need to hear more solutions, I think, in the media about talking about income inequality and whatnot. And one solution that I really like and would like to hear you talk about is the basic income. And very briefly, there's a paper put out by a scholar named Gary Flumenhoff called Applying the Alaska Model in a Resource-Poor State, the example of Vermont. And basically what their calculations say is that there's enough resources in Vermont that every Vermonter could have $1,972 per month, and that's a very low-end estimate. So what do you think about the basic income?
I think it's something that absolutely should be explored. I think it deals with a couple of fundamental issues that we have got to address as Americans. In this great nation, should we have well over 40 million people living in poverty, struggling to put food on the table? Or should we, in fact, make sure that everybody at least has a basic income? And I believe we should. Then we got to figure out the best way that we do that. I think it's a moral issue. By the way, it's an economic issue. Because when you put money into the hands of working people, they're going to go out spending it. And that creates jobs as well.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your calls for the Senator right after the news at the bottom of the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Sign up for the Bernie Buzz. You can check him out on Facebook. He's got a great Twitter account. All kinds of ways to reach him. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 28 minutes before the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. And Senator Sanders, you're still with us?
I am. Tom, what I'd like to do for a second.
Sure.
At the beginning of the program, I asked people to start thinking about some of the really most important issues facing this country. And we've gotten, I think, four calls today. And it's interesting because they do deal with questions that we don't talk about enough in the media. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't talk about enough in Congress. Jackie from Washington talked about the legislative process being more transparent, not having riders attached to big bills. There is right now, when I get back on Monday, there will be a continuation of the discussion about the budget of the United States of America. Very little discussion about the budget, $4 trillion document, about the Republican effort to throw 27 million people off of health care, give huge tax breaks to billionaires, massive cuts in education and nutrition and Medicare. We need a lot of discussion on that issue. Aaron of Ohio talks about disabilities and Social Security. A lot of folks out there, if they watch TV, they think Social Security is going broke. It's not going broke. It hasn't contributed to the deficit. Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 18 years. We've got to extend it. We've got to expand benefits. It is not going broke. Jeanette talks about media and how it is people in Idaho, for example, and many other parts of the country don't hear alternative points of view. That's an issue we've got to be thinking about. How do you have a media out there that is not just corporately owned, but that allows a discussion of the serious issues facing our country? Jake talks about, from Georgia, talks about poverty, basic income. Why is it that we have the huge disparity of wealth and income and so many people living in poverty in what is, in fact, the richest country in the world? What are the ideas that we have to address it? Poverty is an issue that is hardly discussed at all. So just open the door for this, Tom, and people start coming up with really good ideas and very good issues that need a lot of discussion. So let's keep it going.
Yeah, we've got callers from California, Illinois, New Jersey, Arkansas, Michigan, Florida, Iowa, Illinois.
All right, it sounds like we got enough. Let's hear.
Okay, Stephen in Brick, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, hi, Senator Sanders. I just wanted to initially start off with saying thank you for the work that you've done for the middle class and the average American as a whole. And as a college student, I'm currently taking on an enormous amount of debt due to the high cost of higher learning in our country. And as I'm sure you're aware, the current governor of our state and of New Jersey, he hasn't been doing much to help the students. And as an American, I understand that how vital education is to the overall condition and progress of our country. However, I worry that the high cost of education is going to prevent us from moving forward as a unified people. And I've also noted the lack of media coverage on the topic, which deepens my concern. So my main question for you is, how can we approach lowering the cost of education for Americans, and how can we get the media to start talking about this a little more?
Oh, Steve, that is just a fantastic question on an issue. I get around the country, and this is one of the issues people care the most about. Here's the story. As Stephen very concisely and effectively stated, we have a real crisis in terms of the affordability of college. We have large numbers of young people who are looking at the cost of college and the debt that they would incur if they went to college, and they're saying, no, I don't want to go to college. I'm not going to come out of school with that kind of debt around my back. And then, as Stephen also said, you got other people who do go to college, and they come out $50,000, $100,000 in debt. I talked to a young doctor here in Burlington, Vermont. She came out of medical school, $300,000 in debt. Dentist I talked to, $250,000 in debt. That is crazy. Meanwhile, around the world, in countries like Germany, Denmark, Scandinavian countries, what they say is, you know what? We want everybody who has the ability, who has the desire to get a college education, to get a higher education, to be able to do so regardless of the income of their family. So in Germany, tuition is free. Denmark, tuition is free. Countries around the world, tuition is free. Is the government just being nice about doing that? No. They understand for the future of their country, in a competitive global economy, you need to have the best educated workforce possible. We are pretty dumb. We're making it harder for young people to get a college education. So what I will tell you, Stephen, is that we're kind of working on the final details of it. But I will be introducing within, I suspect, the next couple of weeks, comprehensive legislation that, in fact, would make tuition free in every public college and university in America and also significantly lower student debt. And I think if we're going to have a strong workforce out there, we're going to give our young people the chances that they need. That is the direction we have to go in.
Lori in Bellevue, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders. Thank you for taking my call. I think that we need to come up with a methodology to get the candidates to discuss the issues. So I think that we need to get all of the candidates to discuss some of the issues on the progressive platform. To do this, maybe if we could get everybody to agree in advance, these are the issues, how would you address them? Kind of like an American Idol style of debate. And everybody would have to get up and address health and education and jobs, and how would their presidency look?
Good.
How would they be able to solve
it? Got it, Lori. Thank you.
Okay, well, Lori is right. And we've got to, you know, we've got to determine, and we have to make certain that candidates for president, candidates for Senate, candidates for House, candidates for governor, in fact, are forced to deal with the real issues facing the American people. That gets back almost to media and so forth. This media very often does not provide that opportunity. Those are not the questions that are being asked. But I think what Lori says is that people all over this country are going to have to tell media, we don't want any more political gossip. We don't care about the process. We don't care about the polls. We don't care about how much money somebody is raising. What we want to know is what they're going to do for us. These are the issues. We're concerned about the decline of the middle class. We're concerned about poverty. We're concerned about income inequality. We're concerned about why we are the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people. We're concerned about climate change. We're concerned about campaign finance and Citizens United. Those are some of the issues that the people are talking about. The cost of higher education. Talk about them. Don't tell me how much money Chris Christie is raising in his campaign for presidency. Frankly, nobody cares. So that's where we, you know, I think Lori is exactly right.
Dakota John in South Dakota. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, thank you. And thank you guys so much for what you do. I'm thinking that what we do need to do is change the wording a little bit when people are asking questions of our candidates. And instead of using climate change, I think we should in place put the words Arctic methane release so that people get curious about it and start looking at the real dangers of what we're facing. And I guess that would be my question. Thank you.
That's the tipping point that could produce an extinction that could kill all life on the planet.
But other than that, it's not too serious an issue, is it?
Right. We did a video with this with Leo DiCaprio. It's,
I know.
Just
you're doing
recently.
A great job on that. DiCaprio is as well. You know, I think Dakota John is, you know, makes a very good point. In any and every way that we can, we have got to inform the American people about what is going on, whether you call it climate change or Arctic methane release or whatever it is. I would suspect and think that what's happened in California in the last week, where the governor has had to issue a declaration cutting, what is it, 25% of water use in the state?
Yeah.
And the huge impact that's going to have. That is the canary in the coal mine. You can expect to see more of that in months and years to come. And the pity of it all is that we know how to reverse climate change. We know what energy efficiency is about. We know what sustainable energy like wind, solar, geothermal is about. We can do it if there's a political will. Now, the problem here is that you have a whole lot of moneyed interest, the Koch brothers at the top, who make a lot of their money through fossil fuel, the big energy companies. They provide huge sources of money to the Republican Party and Republican candidates. And with very few exceptions, most Republicans are refusing to acknowledge even that climate change is real and caused by human activity. So we've got a lot of work to do, and I think Dakota John makes a very good point.
Denise in Calumet, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. I want you to know that your work is phenomenal. I have a question about corporations being talked about now as a person, and if there's a way to undo that, because this country is almost held hostage to the money these corporations make and the power they have, like just over the Republicans and buying elections and all of the above, and the media. So if we could, like, not get them to be called people or a person anymore, maybe that would help things go in a different direction.
Well, thank you, Denise. And again, excellent point. What Denise is talking about, I think, is the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. And what that's about is that in a horrendous 5-4 decision, which is now undermining American democracy big time, Supreme Court says that what freedom and First Amendment rights are, that if you're a corporation, you're a billionaire, my goodness, your freedom, you have the freedom to buy elections. You want to spend a few $100 million on an election? Hey, that's your freedom. That it undermines democracy. That it creates a situation where candidates trying to represent the middle class or working class will find it increasingly difficult to win in those elections. That the Supreme Court wasn't worried about too much. So, Denise, yes, we have to overturn Citizens United and all that that decision stands for. We need to move toward a Disclosure Act, and we also need to move, in my view, to public funding of elections.
We'll be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders in our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And visit Sanders.Senate.gov for Bernie's site, where you can sign up for his newsletter, The Bernie Buzz. It's a great news site. And also you can find him on Facebook and Twitter. And welcome back, Tom, in St. Paul, Minnesota, watching on Free Speech TV. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Bernie. I just wanted to ask you, since this Sunday will be the 70th anniversary of Franklin Roosevelt's death, whether you can begin to start invoking his memory and maybe quote, because you're the closest that you sound like him. I think we're the closest we have of another FDR, and I think we should sort of invoke his memory since, you know, the righties are going to be talking about Reagan. We should invoke FDR, and I think you would be the best messenger for that. What do you think?
Well, I think, Tom, that's a great idea. And we do, if you go to my Facebook, which you can find at sanders.senate.gov, what we have done, in fact, Tom, is use a lot of FDR's quotes. You know, Facebook, you got to be pretty brief. And they often get a very, very good response. And when he talks about, I think we just had something up within the last week, that a country is judged not by what it does for its most affluent, but what it does for the people most in need. And certainly his incredible speech, and Tom, was in 1936 when he said, yes, I understand that the economic royalists, the billionaire class of his time, yeah, they hate me, and I welcome their hatred. Was that something like what he said?
Yeah, it was July 27, 1936 at Madison Square Garden. He was accepting the nomination for his second term.
You know, and Tom makes the point. The Republicans have done a phenomenal job, and not an accident, trying to tell us what a great president Ronald Reagan was. We have not done a good job in talking about the incredible achievements of people like FDR, or for that matter, Lyndon Johnson, whose administration gave us Medicare and Medicaid and so many important programs that millions of people utilize today.
Let's see here. Oops. Kent in Henderson, Arkansas. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yes, Senator. I was wanting to ask you if you were aware that certain Part D providers, mine happens to be Aetna, is calling trying to flip people from their hometown pharmacies to Walmart or to mail order. They called me out of the blue and said that my pharmacy wasn't in network anymore, which they are, and the pharmacist stated that he had a lot of elderly people that were being tricked into switching.
Well, that's outrageous. You know, it just gets back to what happens so much in our very complicated healthcare system, where the function of folks is to rip people off in many ways and make money, rather than provide quality and cost-effective service. I was not aware of that. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, this Part D, this is the partial privatization of Medicare that, that Congress drilled holes into and said, let's bring in these private companies. We,
you know, in
just
other words,
a few seconds
just
left.
A word on that. I want to get to more questions. The issue of health care, and people should be aware, A, we are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people. B, we still have 35 million people who are uninsured. C, apropos of the last question we received, our people pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And D, in the midst of all of that, we end up spending almost twice as much per capita on health care as do the people of many other nations. And our health care outcomes in some cases are not as good. So we have a dysfunctional health care system in many respects, and the caller points out one example of it.
We'll be right back 10 minutes before the hour. Our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program, sanders.senate.gov. Check out Bernie's website. We'll be right back.
Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders here with us.
This is what modern technology can do, right?
You're right.
Raise an issue, and 3 minutes later, Tom has the speech right on the radio.
Well,
that was an extraordinary speech, by the way.
It was. And tip of the hat to Shane Farnan, our associate producer, who just dug that right out and said, you want this? And I was like, yeah.
That's great. And what it talks about, if I can say for a moment, is that what was the strength of FDR is that he had the courage to say, yeah, I am taking on, you know, he called them economic royalists. We call them the billionaire class today. And that's what we have to do. If you think we can make the changes that we need for the middle class and working families of this country without standing up to these guys who have so much wealth and so much power, both legislatively and the media and so forth, you would be mistaken. That is what we have got to do. And FDR, to his credit, gave that speech. And what did he do? He got 46 out of 48 states?
I don't remember the numbers, but he
I think he did. I think he lost, by the way, he lost my own state of Vermont, and he lost Maine.
Yeah.
And that's brought out, as goes Maine, so goes Vermont or something. Remember?
Yeah, used to be. Yeah. Good Republican states. Okay, John in Oak Park, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator John Monahan from Oak Park. I would like to see you as a senator put forth a bill calling that all veterans, male and female, cannot be denied the right to vote, them and their immediate families. Can you do it?
Well, what we are working on is that I want all Americans who are American citizens and eligible to vote to be able to vote, not just veterans. And what we are seeing right now is voter suppression taking place under the guise of trying to combat voter fraud, which is virtually non-existent. So, John, what we have in America and what we have got to combat, and I will be very active, is to say that, no, I don't think you need to come up with all kinds of voter ID cards, which may be expensive or may be impossible for certain people to get. They have to prove that they're American citizens, that they live in the community, and, you know, they need to fulfill certain requirements. But let us not go out of our way to try to make it hard for veterans or non-veterans to participate in the political process, which is exactly what Republican governors and legislatures all over this country are doing. And the reason they're doing it is they understand that when Americans look at their agenda, more tax breaks for the rich and corporations, endless wars, more military spending and cutbacks in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and education, that is not what the American people want. So to win elections, one of the things they have to do is not only make it easier for them to get contributions from billionaires and millionaires, but also to make it harder for working people and poor people to vote.
Vince in LaGrange, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Listen, I humbly appreciate it. Governor Sanders, I'll tell you, you're a hero of mine, but you brought up something about income, inequality. I just give you a for instance here. My wife worked for a company for 10 years. Other companies bought the company. She was laid off for 7 months. They brought her back, started her as a new employee, lowered her salary by $6,000 a year, took her from hourly and put her on salary. Now, also, I've seen the insurance charges. Companies now seem to be paying less as a portion of the amount of insurance paid. For people. How do you stop this? Well, how do you stop Fox News? I've got a brother.
You're raising the basic issues. What you have just described, and tell your wife, I'm sure she knows this, it's gone on to millions of workers. I've seen it in my own, you know, community right here. You have a company that said, oh, you work for this company for 20, 30 years. We want you to, quote unquote, reapply for your job. Reapply for your job. And that goes on all over the place. And that's a means they redefine the job. And they say, thank you for 20 years of service. Now you have to compete against, you know, 23-year-olds. We're going to cut your wages down substantially. And, of course, as part of the war against working families so that the companies can make more and more profits, what they do is cut back on the health care that they are providing, the amount of money they're putting into health care and asking workers to pick up more. So you got lower wages, sometimes longer hours. Sometimes workers ask to contribute more into healthcare. You add that up. That is why, exactly. People are working longer hours for lower compensation, and why, you know, we are seeing more income and wealth inequality in America. It's exactly what's going on, Vince. And how do you stop that? Well, you stop that by taking on frontally the people who are doing these things. And we are not, you know, and basically this means working people getting organized to stand up and to end this kind of attacks on working families.
Senator, we have about a minute and a half left. If you're
well, Tom, we've gotten some, you know, great questions and comments today. Vince's last point, you know, just I think brings it all together, what happened to his wife. And the question that we have got to ask is, how we stop this 40-year decline of the American middle class, how we provide health care to all of our people, as does every other major country on earth, how we create the millions of jobs that we need, because real unemployment is not 5.5%, it's 11%, how we make sure that college is affordable for all of our people so that we can get bright young people engaged in the economy and job creation and not lose the global warfare that we're having competitively with other countries. Those are the issues that are out there. And I began the program by talking about one particular outrage, that you have a number of major corporations that make billions of dollars in profits who are not paying a nickel in taxes to the United States government. And that means we need real tax reform. At the end of the day, what is required in my view is a real change in political consciousness in this country, and that people understand that in a democracy it's ordinary people, one person, one vote, who determine the future of our country, and not billionaires who are able to buy and sell politicians.
Senator, thank you so much for everything you do and for being on our program.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Take care. We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. I did want to start out with just two quick little riffs. Some things going on in the news that I think are consequential. The first is yesterday over at Talking Points Memo, Josh Marshall wrote a piece about the murder of Walter Scott and much of the issues around police culture. And in that article, he had a link to a website called PBSO, as in Palm Beach Sheriff's Officer, talk.com. And it's a website for cops in Palm Beach, Florida, police officers to be talking with each other. And and it pointed to a specific thread titled Tricks of the Trade, Let's Exchange. And I thought I'd just read you a few of these posts from these Palm Beach Sheriff's Office officers or whoever it is who's posting. The first one, it says, this is what's opened this thread, Tricks of the Trade, Let's Exchange. I was lucky to get a really good FTO when I started almost 15 years ago. I'm assuming that's something training officer. I have a method for getting people off the street that should not be there. Mouthy drivers, street lawyers, a-holes, and just about anyone else trying to make my job difficult. Under my floor mat, I keep a small plastic dime baggie with cocaine in residue. Since it's just residue, if it's ever found during a search of my patrol car, like during an inspection, it's always easy enough to explain. It must have stuck to my foot while I was walking through Sandcastle. I assume Sandcastle is the police station or the evidence room or something. Anyways, no one's going to question an empty baggie. The residue is the key because you can fully charge some, I'll just say ass without the rest of it, with possession of cocaine, heroin, or whatever, just with the residue. How to get it done? I asked Mr. Doe for his identification. He pulls out his wallet. I observed a small plastic baggie fall out of his pocket. This part is in quotes, so that's what you tell the court. You get the idea. Easy, right? Best part is those baggies can be found in lots of places, so you can always be ready. Don't forget to wipe the baggie on the person's skin after you arrest them because you want their DNA on the bags so if they say that you planted it or if they fight you in court. This is one of my favorite tools. I don't use it often, but when I have to do something, when I have to do something to remove someone, this is a good way to do it with minimal effort. And somebody else posted, you should quit and you should be arrested. Too bad your moral compass is so broken. This job is easy to do if you do it correctly. Good. And then the guy replies saying, you would think differently if you were a law enforcement officer. He's assuming a civilian posted that. He says, we have to make use of every tool we have. Many deputies do it. Hell, Drummond got caught lying blatantly in a search warrant. Must be one of the police officers at Palm Beach in court. And he got a fat attaboy from our sheriff. And then the guy who called him out says, what do you mean if I was a law enforcement officer? LEO, I am. And with more time than you, and I have never lied on any official document or affidavit to arrest anyone. Excrements are disgusting and not representative of good deputies or police officers. The truth is I find your conduct to be galling and criminal, and I really wish you were caught pulling this stunt because I would happily arrest you and testify against you. So this is, you know, a bit of a debate. And then, you know, a couple of cops jump in and say, so tell me, what are you going to do about it? That's right, nothing. You'll just sit there with your mouth shut because you don't want to upset the brass. Or else you can go find a new job. You're all talk, all bark and no bite. You don't stand for crap. You talk big and bad, but we all know it's mental masturbation because you ain't blank word. Okay, so then they go on from this. There's a long conversation about how you plant drugs on people. And then they, and in fact, toward the end, it says, works the same way as me always keeping 2 grams of marijuana with me at all times. When the time comes and I have to sprinkle it on somebody to have an arrestable reason, I just take the marijuana, sprinkle it all over the car, and thus have PC. I'm not sure what that means. And all that fun stuff. Oh, and the driver goes to jail for possession. Another guy replies, and this is where it gets really interesting. He says, that marijuana is so rookie. I used to use that myself. But how do you explain it to a supervisor if he sees it in your car? It's a sure way to end up in a jam. I do what the OP suggests, the original poster. In other words, the bag with residue. He says, also, I learned long ago not to carry a real throwdown. Now, throwdown is a gun that's been used in a crime someplace or just, you know, a gun that is not an official gun, it's not a legal gun, and when you arrest somebody, you drop it next to them and say, see, he had a gun, he was going to use it on me, that's why I had to shoot him, or that's why I had to arrest him. So, back to this. He says, I learned long ago not to carry a real throwdown, because if it's found, you get written up for having an unauthorized weapon. better to keep an airsoft in the trunk. Now, an airsoft is a pistol that shoots BBs or pellets. It's basically an air gun. It's a BB gun. It's a pellet gun that looks like a real gun. Okay, that's what an airsoft is. And in fact, there was a case of a guy being shot with an airsoft just a few months ago. He says, better to keep an airsoft in the trunk, won't raise any flags, and is fully explainable if you get into a bad shoot. Bad shoot. Bad shoot being cop talk, apparently, for you killed somebody, maybe inappropriately. Or you know. He says, after all, how were you supposed to know it was an airsoft when the suspect you shot was waving it around, threatening your life? You were in fear and couldn't take that chance. Another guy replies, ever want to get a suspect to make spontaneous utterances? It's easy to do, especially in the summer. Now, keep in mind, this is a Florida police department. Just put him in the back with a heater on and tell him you'll be doing your paperwork outside until he has something to tell you. Turn it to high and let his ass bake. 15 minutes, he'll be ratting out his own mama. I had only one guy too stupid to talk. I sprayed some OC in the back. I'm guessing that's, you know, pepper spray or, you know, one of the sprays. I sprayed some OC in the back to make it real hot, and he finally told me what I wanted to know. I learned that from my FTO. He had all the game. Then another guy says in response to that, this one is great. Usually I just look at his pics on his phone to see if he has dick pics, and then I threaten to post them on his Facebook. Or I look for text messages I know are drug dealers. I send messages from his phone saying he's now an informant. One day this little white piece of blank wannabe gangster was so smack, I put him in my car and drove him to Sandcastle, where a bunch of serious gangster-looking N-words were there. He spells it out, of course. I kicked him out of the car and told the N-words he was getting too rowdy at a white supremacist meeting. Then I drove off and saw him running for his life in my rear view. We got called back like a half hour later, and he was taken to Bethesda with broken ribs and jaw. He wasn't talking blank word after that. Another one. I have a special one reserved for the biggest blank heads. After their arrest, put some dope in their pocket, let the jailer find it. Booyah! Charged with introduction to contraband, bitches. Minimum mandatory for that one. And then the conversation continues from there. Page after page after page. You know, what's the best way to... And then it got posted. This thread, which started on February 16th, This is now April, right? Are we in April? Yeah. So this thread got started about 2 months ago. Then it got posted yesterday. TPM and a few other websites, you know, put a link to this. And so this guy posts in the thread, to the person who gave the interview to the liberal blog, you stupid, smug, arrogant bastard, you have no idea what you have done, do you? It's beyond me that in 2015 you still think you can be completely anonymous. And then another guy says, you made us famous, you rat blanking bastard. If we ever catch who you are, we are going to take a long time getting calls where you need 94. Now, I'm assuming 94 is a police officer needing assistance from other officers. You might even get injured by a suspect you never see. Who knows what will happen to you, you rat blank. And so they're a little upset that this kind of went public. Okay, number one. How do we address issues of culture within our police departments? Secondly, the Iran supreme leader, this does not have to do with the Iranian nuclear negotiations, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei warned Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. They are both fighting in Yemen, right? The Saudis are fighting in Yemen, and the Iranians are fighting in Yemen, and it seemed at the beginning that they were all fighting against ISIS and had, you know, common cause, but now it's breaking into, you know, keep in mind, Saudi Arabia supports the Sunni fundamentalists, the Wahhabists, the Al-Qaeda, ISIS kind of folks, and Iran supports the Shiite faction, which the bad guys in that faction mostly are Hezbollah, and a war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, in my mind, is now looking possible.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, you know, Tom Cotton obviously doesn't know this, but Iran has a modern army and air force, and Saudi Arabia has the third largest defense budget in the world. This could be bad. So, all that said, let's go back to picking up your phone calls, because it's Anything Goes Friday. Jack in Ridgeway, Colorado. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thanks. What's up?
Here's a suggestion I'd like you to mull over to answer some of the questions about media, getting the message out, getting the left together. I would suggest you know, in April of 2016 that we have a People's Congress, a progressive People's Congress, or just to call it People's Congress, in a major city like Boston, for example. And you get progressive groups, coalitions, the Progressive Caucus, politicians, you know, Warren, Sanders, et cetera, and meet for 3 days to produce a 10-point platform. And usually those topics that are endorsed by the majority of Americans. All of it live-streamed, fundraised through a People's Congress website, as well as trying to approach other donors, invite other demo candidates to come, and then do it in Boston. They've got, I think the Ted Kennedy Center has a mock-up of the Senate. So major addresses by Warren and Sanders and others, and get a few major celebrities there, too, to attract the media. And it would also bring, you know, aside from the 10-point platform, which shouldn't be too hard to produce, it would be a way to bring all the different progressive groups, Move to Amend and PD America and all the others, together to form a kind of collective action program for the fall.
Yeah. It's a great idea, Jack. Maybe, you know, hopefully somebody is listening who has either the organizing talent or the money to hire the organizing talent. This would take a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of money.
You'd have a year out, so yeah. It wouldn't be, I don't think it would be that difficult.
You want to try it?
Some large meetings, and then
Jack, if you can put this thing
for action coordination. It's a way of bringing herd of cats that represent.
Hey, Jack.
Yeah.
If you do this, or if you can get somebody to do this, I mean, you know, maybe somebody who's listening right now will do it too, and I make the same offer to any of them. Just, you know, give us a shout. We will promote it on this program. I would love to see it. I think it's a great idea.
Okay, yeah, well, Tag, you're it too, because you're in contact with so many different groups.
Yeah, everybody wants me to do their idea. I work an 11-hour day here, basically 7 days a week, but, you know, definitely 5 days a week, and then I write books on the weekend. I just, you know, respectfully, I can't take on another project. As much as I would love to, but I think you've got a great idea, Jack, and I wish you well on it. And if you don't pick it up, you know, I hope somebody else does. I genuinely think it's a great idea. Thank you. Don in Seattle. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Love your program.
Thank you.
If there was a Give 'Em Hell Harry award, I think you and Mr. Sanders deserve both that award.
Thank you.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you what you think about the $15 minimum wage law going through across the country.
It would take the minimum wage back to just slightly above what it was in 1968, and productivity has gone up, I think 57% is the number that sticks in my brain since then. So the minimum wage arguably should be even higher than that. You know, it should be, you know, if the minimum wage had kept up with inflation right now, it'd be around $13. If it had kept up with productivity, it would be around $22. So I'm down with, I'm all in favor of $15 national minimum wage. It's just a starting point. It's an entry level. Thank you, Don, for the call. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, Tom. I've been here with you 20 minutes past the hour. Oh, the other news is that Hillary Clinton's folks have leaked, apparently, that on Sunday she is going to announce that she is running for the presidency of the United States on the Democratic side, and that she's going to make the announcement via social media. So that'll be very interesting. Another police beating, a Rodney King kind of thing, caught on tape out in, is it California, Arizona? San Bernardino County, California. Sheriff's officers tracking down, catching a guy who was running away from them on horseback. They got him, but once they got him, they then stood around and, you know, one was kicking him between the legs real aggressively, and the others were pounding on his head, his shoulders, his body, just beating on this guy, beating on this guy, beating on this guy. It's like, yeah, you know, he was wanted for possibility of identity theft. Arrest the guy by all means. I mean, you know, identity theft should go to jail. Identity thieves should go to jail. But just because somebody runs away from you, I mean, you charge them with fleeing. That's a crime, too. And they'll serve their time for that. But it hurts police departments. When police officers are behaving like this, it hurts police. There's a lot of good cops in this country, and they have to be in a lot of pain right now and questioning a lot about what's going on in this country. And there's a very different police culture in many of the other fully advanced countries of the world, in the Northern European countries in particular. There literally is a different culture. Because in Denmark and Sweden and Finland and Germany and France, cops make a good living. They don't have to work part-time as a bouncer at a strip club. They don't have to figure out ways to supplement their income. They don't have to make it on their overtime. Cops make a good living, and the standards to become a police officer are higher than here. If we just did those two simple things, you know, you've got to have a college degree to be a police officer in corrections, and we're going to pay you better. I've said many times, our present is in the hands of our police, and our future is in the hands of our teachers. And we should be paying both of them something close to what doctors are making, in my opinion. Or at least the bottom end of the wage scale for physicians. David in Minneapolis. Hey, David, thanks for listening to KTNF. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I actually called in when Bernie was on, and so I want to tell Bernie something. I hope he's listening, or maybe you can get him the message. And the message is, please, please do run for president. If nothing else, it'll give Hillary someone to talk to, and we'll get some of Bernie's ideas out on the national stage, and we can get Bernie himself on the national stage. I think he would be the best person for president of the United States. I don't think he has sufficient name recognition to make it. Yeah. But he's got to get out there.
The challenge is going to be to find a billionaire who will fund Bernie the way that they'll fund everybody else. And of course the grassroots. I mean, you know, Bernie's not looking for a billionaire. He's there are a lot of people who are going to I think it's Bernie.org is his campaign website, or BernieSanders.com. I think there's also a website, and of course Sanders.Senate.gov. Did you see, by the way, in this, not to diminish Bernie in any way, but did you see that Martin O'Malley today came out and said that the enforcement of laws against banks is basically pathetic in the United States? And he compared it to something. I have to go back and find the story, but it was something like, you know, we more aggressively prosecute shoplifters than we do banks that steal from us. It wasn't shoplifters, but it was some one of these minor categories. And he was right. Martin O'Malley was right. So, you know, we may have a Democratic field with some progressive voices emerging as time goes on. We'll see. We'll see. But, David, I agree with your sentiment. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to KTNF. Paul in Holbrook, New York. Hey, Paul, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I wanted to expound on your theory about the rich, the shills, and the
suckers,
the rooms, if you will, the suckers. You know, when George Bush was president, for three of the terms in Congress, they controlled it, the Republicans.
Right.
He's a Republican, they're Republican. When George Bush got reelected and the 109th Congress came in, Ron Paul introduced an anti-abortion legislation known as the Sanctity of Life. It was right at the beginning of the term. It got referred to the House Committee on the Judiciary and then got referred to the Subcommittee on the Courts and Internet and Intellectual Property. The bill died there. No companion bill was put in the Senate. Now, they may not have had the votes to overcome a filibuster, but near the end of that term, Bill Frist threatened the nuclear option to get rid of the filibuster requirement over judicial nominees,
right,
not abortion.
Right, because judicial nominees control money. No, the last thing the Republicans want to do is genuinely outlaw abortion, because then they would no longer have a wedge topic that they could draw a large cohort of suckers in to vote for them.
Yeah, but when are these suckers going to wake up and realize they're just being pandered to?
Probably never. The Republican Party has been pandering to these suckers since the 1870s, and they're not going to start tomorrow. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. You're spot on. This is and since Roe v. Wade, I mean, Republicans have had a lot of opportunities to do something about abortion. They won't. I mean, they're nibbling around the edges, and at the state level, they'll do. You know, they've made it much harder for women to get abortions. But now outlawing it nationally ain't gonna happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
28 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with your calls after this. Fondroyantly Ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. The good. President Barack Obama. The White House has announced that the president supports a ban on conversion therapy, a controversial practice which seeks to change an individual's sexual orientation using prayer and other techniques. The move was made public in a statement on WhiteHouse.gov with administration advisor Valerie Jarrett saying that, "We share your concern about its potentially devastating effects on the lives of transgender as well as gay, lesbian, bisexual, and queer youth. As part of our dedication to protecting America's youth, this administration supports efforts to ban the use of conversion therapy for minors. Conversion therapy is exploitative, anti-scientific, and cruel." It's also how Marcus Bachmann used to make his living anyway. I don't know if he still is. Good on the White House and the president for speaking out against it. Let's hope this starts a push for a nationwide ban. The bad. Wisconsin. Ah, how the great Badger State has fallen. On Tuesday, the Republican-dominated Wisconsin Board of Commissioners of Public Lands pulled a Rick Scott and voted to ban its members from talking about, you guessed it, climate change. This is a big deal because, as Bloomberg pointed out, the agency continues to receive some income from the timber industries. That makes climate change, as it affects the forests of Wisconsin, relevant, at least in some part, to the long-term health of the board. Another day, another example, the total insanity that is the Republican Party's position on climate change since they've sold out to big oil and, you know, big coal, big fossil fuel. And the very, very ugly Michelle Bachmann. And this is not about her husband Marcus Bachmann's little business doing gay conversion therapy. During a Tuesday appearance on a Florida talk show, radio talk show, the former Minnesota Republican congresswoman offered this brilliant take on the Iranian nuclear negotiations. Take a listen.
This virtually guarantees, in my opinion, a World War III. And I think that alone would qualify Barack Obama for being the worst president that the United States has ever had to endure.
Right. Actually, Congresswoman, it's people like you who are going to start World War III. Is your solution to every foreign policy problem is to blow things up. And that's very, very ugly. Okay, back to Anything Goes Friday. Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Since you have such a talent at condensing and explaining things to people, I suggest that you read an article in the New Yorker March 9th, this year, 2015, called Break In at Y-12 by Eric Schlosser. It's about Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the only complex in the United States to fabricate and store weapons-grade uranium.
Right.
They put up more than $500 million into refitting and construction since 9/11. On July 28, 2012, Gregory Boteri, Obed, I'm not sure I pronounce it correctly, Michael Wally, and Megan Rice, an 82-year-old nun, part of the plowshares movement to beat swords into plowshares and pruning hooks from the Bible, an anti-nuclear weapons group broke in or breached the security and spray-painted peace slogans on the buildings, which produces nuclear weapons. Sister Megan was sentenced to 3 years in prison, and at 85, she's the oldest woman in federal prison today. Wally and Boteri, Obed, got 5 years each. But besides this injustice, the real story is the failure of privatization. This is what I hope you'll be able to condense and explain to people. The security system was all privatized, and the corruption and cost-cutting and profit-making that privatization brought about is what made it possible for these three elderly people to breach the security of a nuclear facility.
Right. Okay, I'll check it out. Break in at Y-12. I'll check it out, Bob. Thank you for the information. David in Nashua, New Hampshire. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk a little bit about messaging. Mm-hmm. We know that the Republicans and the right wing are excellent at that. And I didn't actually read your book, Cracking the Code, but as I understand it, that was the focus of it, right?
Yes, it's a book about how Democrats can be good at messaging. And here's the thing that I think most people don't get. Republicans have become good at messaging because they're owned by big business, and big business has all these advertising agencies and PR firms and consultants and things. And Republican candidates cannot get elected by telling the truth about their actual positions. You know, if a Republican candidate got up and said, I want to privatize Social Security, I want to do away with Medicare, I want to, you know, no more public roads, we're going to turn everything into toll roads and give it to private corporations, no more health care of any kind for anybody in this country unless they're rich, no more money for public schools, whatever, they can't get elected. So they have to lie. Republicans have to lie in order to get elected. Democrats have never had to lie to get elected. All they've had to do is tell the truth. We're here, you know, we brought you Social Security, we brought you Medicare, we brought you the 40-hour work week, we brought you workplace safety protections, we brought you the clean air, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? And so Democrats never got good at lying, and as a result, they never really got good at messaging. I mean, the telling the truth part, the masters of that, of course, were Harry Truman and Franklin Roosevelt, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, and that's why it's so maddening, right? Because we don't have to lie. So it's like, right, put the truth out there.
Yep.
But there was just a couple things. Like earlier, Bernie said, he was talking about our crazy tax code, and he talked about asking the wealthy to pay more.
Right.
And that always makes me cringe, you know, as though it's a favor that we're asking them. Let's ask them to pay a little more because we really need it. And rather than saying our tax code is out of control and people need to pay their fair share and we're going to fix it.
Well, my simple phrase for that is roll back the Reagan tax cuts.
Right. That would definitely help. And on the issue of flag burning, a lot of times I hear people say, should it be legal to burn the flag, implying that there's only one, rather than saying, should it be illegal to burn a flag, which is more accurate.
Right.
And then I think that it would be, the issue would be clearer then. Also, a lot of times I hear people talking about the average working person,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that's a real flattering description. I think a person of average means is both more accurate and more appealing, because average working person, it's like, well, you're basically unremarkable and you're a cog, rather than average means.
I think a lot of extraordinary person. I mean, respectfully. I've spent a good chunk of my life thinking of myself as a relatively average working person, and a lot, you know, I've never thought of that as anything other than that's the American dream. That was my dad's life. You know, it's get a job, you show up, you keep your nose clean, you work hard, and you can have the American dream. That's for the average working person. Respectfully, I disagree. I think that's a phrase that. And saying, you know, people of means and things like that, that A, could be confused with people of means, of great means, and B, I think a lot of people don't, it's not a familiar phrase.
Work.
Yeah, it wouldn't immediately resonate. It's not going to get you people. But I think your point is really, really an important one, David. And it's not that Democrats need to start doing what Republicans are doing, which is, you know, lying, inventing things that are just aren't so, you know, like George Bush having a, you know, he wants to make it easier. He wants to reduce the regulations on air pollution, make it more profitable for companies that dump air pollution into the air by allowing them to dump more into the air. And so he calls that the Clear Sky Act, or the Clean Sky Act, or the Clean Air Act, or whatever. Yeah, it was the Clear Skies Act, I think it was. And the same thing with water. I mean, you know, he did the Healthy Forests Act, remember? You know, we're going to cut down more forests, so we'll call it the Healthy Forests Act. The Republicans are really, really good at lying about this stuff, and even in the names of their legislation. The Democrats need to get a whole lot better at describing what they're doing and describing their history, their successes, and their worldview in sentences rather than paragraphs, in bumper stickers rather than in arguments. I'm with you, David. Thank you for the call. Jared in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jared, what's up? Jared, you are on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to talk about the OAS meeting, Organization of American States.
Right, where President Obama is in Panama.
Yeah, checked in Panama today and tomorrow. Nothing in the paper in the New York Times today. A one-liner in the New York Times yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You often talk about how uninformed the vast American public, the voter is. I don't think that we quite realize how the Cuban Revolution happened,
right.
Why it happened, and when Castro came out of the Sierra in 59, January 1, 59, a little bit later he went to Washington and he tried to get he'd been spending 5 years fighting Batista backed
right.
by the states.
Right.
He was stony broke, so he went to Washington and he tried to interest the U.S. government in helping him out.
Right. Richard Nixon shot it down. Vice President Nixon.
No.
No?
No. It was Dulles refused to see him, and Eisenhower refused to see him.
Yeah.
And regrettably, he looked around and he found the Soviets that would help him out with the funds.
Right.
And it's gone from bad to worse.
Yeah, I'm with you. The other situation with regard to the OAS that concerns me is that just in the last month, we have slapped sanctions on Venezuela. We're trying to topple their government again. And that is grim. Jared,
you're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, there's a lot in the news we all need to be paying attention to. We'll be back with more conversation about that right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Corky in Hilton, New York, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Corky.
Hello, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, I was wanting to talk about the police and the corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is you're not paying enough. You don't pay them enough that they fear losing their job.
Yeah.
If you paid them enough, they would fear losing that income. So that's why you have all this corruption.
Well, and I think that's a piece of it. I think it's a piece of it. I don't think, you know, the old Republican argument is you can't solve problems by throwing money at them. There is a certain amount of truth to that. I think that in addition to paying police better, we have to change the police culture in this country. And I think that has to do with hiring different people to be police officers.
Yeah, you have to hire intelligent people. That guy that they shot, he shot and killed.
Yeah.
He wasn't that far away where if he was a good cop who was trained and was worth his salt, he could have shot him in the leg.
No, you don't do that. When police officers pull their weapon and shoot, they shoot to kill. I mean, that's it. There is no such thing as shooting to wound.
That's fine if the guy has a weapon. This guy produced no weapon.
Right. This police officer should not have pulled his service revolver. He should have either chased Walter Scott or he should have got on the radio immediately and said, I got a suspect on foot. Here's where he is. Get me some help.
That's what I'm talking about, the quality of the police. That if this guy feared losing his pay.
Well, I think he still fears losing his pay, Corky. In fact, he's got an eight-month pregnant wife. And, you know, this is a devastating thing for him, for his family. By the way, my prediction is that he will not be convicted of murder. My prediction is that if anything, he's going to get he may be convicted of manslaughter or something like that. They're going to come up with. Well, we'll see. We'll see. My prediction, you know, what is Mr. Freeman's first name? Kimon. Kimon Freeman was on my radio show, or on my TV show last night, and the program director over at We Act Radio, and a great activist and person in here in Washington, D.C. And he asked the question, which I don't know the answer to, has a police officer ever been convicted of first-degree murder or of murder? In the case of a white cop shooting a black man in the history of the United States, has it ever happened?
I don't believe so. I've never heard it.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then there's something deeply wrong. I mean, that's like looking at at conviction rates, or I mean, it's like looking at the stats that have to do with you know, drug crimes. You know, African Americans 8 times more likely to be imprisoned for a drug crime than a white person, yet they're less likely to use drugs than white people, for example.
Yeah.
You know, so
here's another thing I wanted to mention. You were talking about the American public not thinking for themselves.
All right.
Do you ever wonder why they will not identify the substance they use for fracking? And I'll tell you why they don't. Because a good portion of that substance is hazardous waste.
Yeah, it is. This is the toxic waste that they used to have to pay $1,000 a pound to dispose of, and now, you know, they're selling it as fracking fluid. And that I believe that you're absolutely right. That's why they won't disclose it, because these are things that used to be called toxic chemicals. Toxic waste, excuse me. Thank you, Corky. Ten minutes before the hour. TGIF, happy Friday. Juma Mubarak, Shabbat Shalom. Hope you're having a great one. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, for the news of the day. Brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kir, the slave from South Sudan, which you can see over at thankless.com/watch. Victoria Jones is with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Well, it's not such a happy Friday for Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky.
Oh, no. Did another woman interview him?
No, actually, it was Paul Lewis of The Guardian.
Uh-oh.
He walked out of a live interview.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Mr. Thinskin.
I know Paul Lewis. He's a good interviewer.
You know, they're starting to – there's a word that has been invented for these. They're called rantrums.
And he ransplains. In this case, I don't believe he attempted to ransplain. I should add, and I've been saying this on the air all day today. I would have said it to you, but I don't need to say it to you now. I've been saying, let's see what happens if Rand Paul ever gets a taste of the British press. Well, he did.
He walked out. We need prime minister's questions in this country so bad at every level of government. At every level of government.
He was asked a couple of things. He was asked about repealing legislation on the criminal justice system. He didn't like that. But then he was then asked in his final question about research showing that white Republicans don't agree with his view that the criminal law is applied in an unequal fashion. I think your premise is incorrect. Actually, I think I can take that message into a white evangelical church anywhere in Iowa and give exactly the same speech and be received well. When Paul Lewis then attempted to follow up remark, quoting a Washington Post ABC poll about Republican views on criminal justice, Paul walked off camera.
Wow. I'm assuming he pulled his mic first.
He pulled his mic first. The lights were turned off. But they were actually turned off by a CNN crew about to conduct another interview.
It's always more fun when they walk off and they're wearing a wireless microphone and they forget to take it off and turn it off.
Wonderful.
Then you get the next 3 minutes of sputtering with their campaign advisors. Anyhow,
yes.
Back to you.
Back on the campaign trail, and it will be the campaign trail as of about noon Sunday. Hillary Rodham Clinton will end months of, well, not really speculation because everybody thought it was going to happen. She will launch her long-awaited 2016 presidential campaign. She will launch it via an online video posted on social media. Then she's going to make stops in key early voting states, including Iowa and New Hampshire. She's going to hold small events with voters, and her stops will include visits to people's homes in those early states.
Wow. It's going to start getting really interesting now.
Yes, the day after Clinton, Marco Rubio, the senator Republican from Florida, will announce that he is running. Mm-hmm. So the crowd starts.
Right, the crowd glows. It grows. And Martin O'Malley had something to say about the banks. He's definitely running to the left of Hillary.
He's definitely running to the left of Hillary. I think most are starting to run to the to the left of Hillary. Lincoln Chafee, the former governor and senator in Rhode Island yesterday, being the first Democrat to come out and actually criticize Hillary Clinton by name.
Whoa.
And so far, nobody's named her.
And who's the guy who was formerly a Republican, then became an
Lincoln Chafee.
Oh, that was Lincoln Chafee.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
He said that she'd supported the Iraq war, and for that reason, she should not be president.
Right. And he opposed it as a Republican. Do I have that right?
Yes, he did. As a Republican, he opposed it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sticking with 2016 theme, a parade of potential Republican presidential candidates will go through their paces, being given 10 minutes each this afternoon at the NRA's annual convention this year in Nashville.
Being held in a gun-free zone.
Well, they're allowed guns. They just have to be disabled.
Right. Yeah, I stand by what I said.
They have to be disabled, even though they are definitely campaign for the right to bring guns into the capitals of the various states where these people have legislatures, but nevertheless, at their own convention,
right,
the guns should be disabled.
So we're going to
almost everybody's there.
So we're going to have the Republican parade, the Republican clown car parade in front of the NRA today, with the exception of Rand Paul and Chris Christie, right?
Rand Paul, Chris Christie, Mike Pence canceled an appearance.
Okay, and Sarah Palin, is she running? Was she invited, or did she cancel?
She canceled an appearance to many people's great disappointment, including my own.
Oh, and every comedian in America.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So what else is up?
The presidents of the United States and Cuba spoke by phone on Wednesday. That would be the second time in more than 50 years. So President Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro spoke before President Obama left Washington for a summit in Panama City, where they both are. Now, it is anticipated that the two will meet today or possibly tomorrow. What form that meeting will take, whether it's what's known as a brush by, whether it's a casual handshake, or whether it's a more formal meeting, is not yet known. But it is anticipated that Obama and Castro will meet. This is the most anticipated part of this year's Summit of the Americas.
Wow. Yeah. What's the status, by the way, of U.S. sanctions against Venezuela? I just recently learned that a month ago we imposed them.
They recently imposed sanctions on 7 individuals in Cuba.
No, I'm talking about Venezuela.
Oh, sorry. Not in Cuba. Excuse me. I meant in Venezuela.
Okay.
That didn't go down terribly well, actually, with other Central American countries.
Right. That's what I was, in the context of the OAS meeting, I was thinking.
Yeah. And partly it didn't go down terribly well because the kind of language that was used in imposing these sanctions on these 7 individuals in Venezuela was sort of boilerplate, very strong language. Right. And so some Central American countries who might not otherwise have come to Venezuela's defense because they're not keen on them did rally to Venezuela's defense. People are expecting something from Venezuela at this summit.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I would hate to see us involved in trying to overthrow another government. Particularly, I was in, Louise and I were in Venezuela during the first coup when they overthrew Chavez. Anyhow, Victoria Jones. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything goes Friday. I was going to say beautiful Friday here in Washington, D.C. At least it's not 30 below zero. We're not having... Oh, my. Travis Getty's writing over at Raw Story. This is an interesting story. More than 50 criminal cases. I shared with you earlier the some of the posts on a police bulletin board in Florida in the Fort Lauderdale area. And I think this is unrelated. I don't. Is that Broward County? Oh, it is. Okay. This is the story. More than 50 criminal cases will be dropped after four Florida police officers were fired over their racist text messages and videos. This is not, they're not talking about the message board that I was reading to you. This is completely separate. The Broward State Attorney's Office has already dropped 12 felony cases, including charges of burglary, cocaine possession, and aggravated assault with a firearm, reported the Sun Sentinel. They've also dropped 19 misdemeanors and one juvenile case involving at least one of the Fort Lauderdale police officers. About 20 cases will be dismissed. All the defendants were blacks, says Ron Ishoy, a spokesman for the state's attorney's office. And all the cases were dropped because at least one of the officers was the principal officer involved in the arrest. These officers, Holding, Wells, Sousa, and Alvarez, have all been fired or resigned. And, you know, one of them, for example, sent a text message that said, quote, I had a wet dream that you found these two N-words in the VW and gave them the death penalty right there on the spot. And it's pretty amazing. Public defender said the four officers were involved in 56 arrests of blacks and other minority suspects since the start of 2014. End a quote from Travis Geddes over at Raw Story. We got a problem in this country. We have a problem. We all of us have a problem. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hey, Margie, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. We need to start working to get rid of the tipped economy and bring those wages up to real wages instead of two something an hour. Two reasons why. First of all,
if I may, Margie, if I may just interrupt you for a second. You said the tipped economy. I think a lot of people might not have caught that or know what you're talking about. You're talking about wages, yes, for people who also earn tips, like typically servers and restaurants and things, right?
Correct.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, there are now reports that restaurants, if you have a table of, say, six or eight people, they are adding a server's fee of 15% to 18%, which most people will think that is the tip. Except it's a server's fee, and the employer is pocketing that money and not giving it to the servers. Second of all, this happened to me and a friend last weekend. We had gone out to eat very late at night. Both of us worked late. It was a national chain. I won't mention it, but if you think of Flying Bovines, you can get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
We were there for about 2.5 hours. We received excellent service. Both of us are good tippers. Shortly before we left, the server came up and explained that it was the end of her shift and she would be leaving, and the other person would be, you know, if we needed anything else, talk to the other person. We said, well, we're getting ready to leave anyways. Let us cash out. And she's like, oh, I've already closed my till. We looked at her, we were like, well, we want to make sure you get the tip. She's like, oh, that's not allowed. The person that cleans it, that is going to clean up after you, will be the one receiving the tip. So the individual who served us for 2.5 hours did an excellent job, did not receive our tip. We were the only ones there. So for those 2.5 hours, she was making $2.15 an hour.
At least relative to you. Yeah, you're right.
We were the only ones. There was only two tables there. This was after basketball game, and the place had cleared out after the basketball game, so there was only two tables there.
Right. Now, just for the record, different states have different laws and different rules on this, and in even different municipalities. When I lived in Portland, they raised the minimum wage for tipped workers up to $8 and change, you know, whatever the minimum wage is for everybody else in the state of Oregon. And when that was being debated in the Oregon legislature, there was all this sturm and drang from the restaurant associations and the restaurateurs saying, oh, my God, this will be the end of our business. We're all going to have to go broke. You'll see us sleeping on the streets. And it passed, and what the result was negligible. I mean, you know, nothing. And, you know, everything was fine. If anything, the restaurant workers having a little more money in their pockets probably helped stimulate the local economy.
Right. But what is going on is just, it's inconscionable. I remember growing up, a good tip was 5%.
Yeah.
Now a standard tip is at least 20%.
Which is businesses, in this case restaurants, shifting the burden of labor costs off themselves and onto their customers. This is the big, you know, this is the big game in business in America, and has been ever since the 1980s, very aggressively. This is the culture that Reaganism and Reaganomics created, which is internalize profits, externalize costs. Externalize them on the public, externalize them on the commons, externalize them anywhere you can other than having to pay for them yourself. And thus increase your profits. Excellent point, Margie. Thanks for bringing it up, and thanks for the call. Don in Joliet, Illinois. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great.
On this police brutality and all the stuff going on with that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
I was a correctional officer at 18.
Wow.
And the first thing I want to touch on, you never, the guy said shoot the wound, you never do that. And we were trained by the state instructor, same instructors as trained the state police officers. You don't shoot to kill. You shoot for center mass.
Right. Right.
That's what it is.
Which is functionally shoot to kill, but you shoot for center mass because
right.
the odds are you're going
to.
Go ahead.
If you're using the rifle, center mass, you hit somebody with a .223, it bounces around the body.
Right.
But you always, they shot you to shoot center mass, and then it goes for legal jargon too. You don't want to go for center.
Well, plus, if you try to shoot somebody in the legs or something, I mean, just the process of discharging a service revolver, discharging a weapon in public, is fraught with all kinds of danger. I mean, you have no idea where those bullets are going to end up, you know, either in direct line or in ricochet. And, you know, I haven't been through the whole formal police training. I went through a short course. In fact, it was the first time the Georgia Police Academy had ever offered any kind of training, to the best of my knowledge, to the public back in, I think it was 96 when the Olympics came to Atlanta. And a friend of mine who was a private detective, I had been shadowing him. I was writing this book, Death in the Pines, which just was published. And actually, I was writing the book that preceded it, but the same character, same thing, a private detective novel. And so I went through this course at the Georgia Police Academy that would qualify me to get a private detective license, which I hadn't held for 2 years, and to work also security for the Olympics, which is why they were offering the course, because there was a lack of police officers. And, I mean, this is the basic stuff you learn. And, you know, back to you, Don.
Well, no, that's good stuff. That's basic. On the range, they couldn't stress that enough. Now, when it comes to the excessive force that's going on a daily or hourly basis around the country, we were trained, you know, I was sued 6 times for excessive force. Now, I didn't lose any of these cases because inmates will throw lawsuits left and right. I never saw, in my 4 years of working there, a group of guards beat people down. There was actually a group that went in on their day off months before I was hired and beat up a bunch of troublemakers, took them to the shower one at a time, and every one of these correctional officers were put in jail.
Wow.
Now, there's no accountability with police these days. With what you see, they're already trying to defend these cops that literally this guy got off the horse, laid down spread eagle, and he got his reward for finally giving up was to be kicked in the groin, kicked in the head several times, which constitutes deadly force.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That video is absolutely horrifying. Don, thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it. 15 minutes past the hour. By the way, at the end, just the end of the news there with Victoria, I said Louise and I were in Venezuela during the first coup. Lest I get in the Bill O'Reilly trap, we were on a cruise ship at their harbor for a few hours.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we had to go back to the cruise ship because the presidential palace had just been snatched or something. But I didn't see any of that. I was just there, you know, in the neighborhood. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Now we have to do everything different now that Bill O'Reilly. Actually, I think I've always copped to it was a cruise. No, I'm not a spy, and I was not there to help the revolution. Oh, man. Anyway, Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jerry, what's thanks for watching Free Speech TV in Santa Fe. What's on your mind?
Oh, my mind is occupied right now with
why Americans are so fixated on considering the Israelis who have attacked us and the Sunni Wahhabi Sunnis in Saudi Arabia who have attacked us, and consider our enemies Iran and the Shiites. I look forward to our staying out of conflicts over there and allowing the Sunnis and Shiites to work it out for themselves. And this, if the arms manufacturers, the merchants of death, would realize that they can make more money selling arms to both sides and allowing the conflict to proceed, we would be much better off than sticking our noses in and supporting, I believe, the wrong side. Now, a few months ago, you approached the possibility that maybe the Shiites are our allies and maybe the Sunnis and the Israelis are less so. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Jerry, thank you. I share your concern about a Sunni-Shia conflict. I'm not sure that there are any good guys in this at the end of the day, but there are some really genuinely evil guys, I mean the ISIS guys, and that came out of this unholy alliance between John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Prince Bandar bin Sultan and Saudi Arabia and a bunch of Saudi billionaires as a way of trying to put together a fighting force that could go into Syria and take down Assad. But now, you know, in Yemen, this battle is going on between we're on the edge of a major battle between Saudi forces and Iranian forces. And I think that's, you know, this has the potential to be an absolute screaming disaster. Jerry, thank you for the call. And whoa, I never saw that before. I pushed the wrong button. Let me see. How do I close that? There we go. Just close the button. Thank you, Jerry. It's really genuinely problematic. How are we going to play this thing out, or do we play it out? How do we prevent this from turning into World War III? How do we prevent this from turning into a region-wide conflict? And then you get Tom Cotton coming out, you know, day before yesterday, the head of the 47 traitors, saying, oh, well, you know, Bill Clinton, 1998, for 3 days, bombed Saddam Hussein's Iraq, and they didn't do anything. So why can't we bomb Iran? They won't do anything over there in the Middle East. Well, that was an Iraq that had been beat in the Gulf War, the Gulf War won by Bush Sr. I mean, beat badly, even pursuing the fleeing forces from Kuwait and killing them on the road back to Baghdad. That was an Iraq that had been under a decade of U.S. sanctions, didn't have, you know, half a million children, had died as a result of diarrheal diseases because they couldn't import chlorine to treat their water because it could be used to make weapons of mass destruction, specifically poison gas. That's a very different thing than Iran. We'll be back. Hey, happy birthday to our former associate producer, Jacob Dean. Jacob, if you're listening, happy birthday. If you're not, hopefully somebody will tell him. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day today. And another year older, but another year wiser. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, how are you today?
Happy Friday, Tom.
Back at you, Wayne. Thank you. What's up?
Yeah, listen, I'm calling about the last hour of last Friday, the first caller. He was calling in response to my asking you about reading the tweets from the Spanish air traffic controller in Kiev.
Right, which I then did during the break, and what I said to that caller was that I respectfully disagree with you. I think that that's I don't know, but it seems to me that that's probably more conspiracy theory stuff than reality. But I could be wrong.
Oh, you mean the Spanish air traffic controllers
right.
Tweets?
Yes.
Are you saying those are more? Well,
yes.
See, that shows you don't understand.
You're right.
Like I said, he was at the Kiev airport
right.
when the plane was being shot down. And you also said last week
Wayne, this guy has not come forward for an interview with the press. This guy has not made himself available. He's never testified in any kind of venue that I could find. I mean, I did a little research on this. And whether he was invented or whether it was a prank or whether it was disinformation from one side or the other or whether it's true and the guy just decided to make himself scarce, I don't know. But lacking some sort of backup for that, I'm not willing to go there.
Okay. Well, he's afraid for his life. That's why he's not coming.
In all probability, if it's true. Sure. Back to you, Wayne.
Say that again?
I said if it's true, I agree. He probably is afraid for his life. Pardon my interrupting you. Back to you, Wayne.
Yeah, that's all right. I want to get back to that caller last week.
Okay.
He was actually telling you that it was okay for the Ukraine to join NATO. The only thing that's going to happen if Ukraine joins NATO is that'll be another country for them to point their missiles at Russia.
That's correct. And in fact, Ukraine came out yesterday and said that they want to join NATO in the context of the military alliance. And this is very dangerous stuff.
Right. The Minsk agreement means nothing to them. All they're doing right now is trying to prepare for an offensive against the people of Donetsk and Donbass.
Right. The eastern regions of Ukraine. Yes.
Right. They're using this time to prepare another war because what they want to do is wipe those people out because they don't want those people there. Those people are a buffer for the Russians, you know, against the Ukrainian government. Mm. So they want to wipe those people out.
Yeah.
So what I want to say is people like U.S. Senate back late last year, when they voted unanimously for sanctions against Russia,
mm-hmm.
They're being played like a fiddle because of the misinformation, disinformation campaign being carried on by the government with the media being their partner in crime on this. So the thing about it is you can't surround Russia with NATO countries and point missiles at them and think nothing's going to happen to you. You know, so that's all I have to say for right now, Tom. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Wayne. We're on the same page. I appreciate it. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk about Social Security so that issue does not go off the radar.
Please.
The first thing that we have to understand is that Social Security is the best, most reliable economic security system that we or any country has ever had in the history of the world.
Agreed.
And I mean the history of the world because the issues of economic security for the aged, the retired, and the disabled, survivors of workers, this has been going on for literally thousands of years.
Yeah.
I talked about this in my talk a couple of weeks ago, and I actually brought up something. Even in this country, maybe you've mentioned this once, Thomas Paine wrote a pamphlet. His last pamphlet was called Agrarian Justice.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of it. He basically invented Social Security in that. He proposed that every person at birth be given
a stipend if you get when you're at age 21. I suppose this would be only males, but you get a 15-pound sterling silver to get started.
Right,
and then. At age 50, every person over age 50 would get 10 pounds sterling a year.
Right.
So,
which was not inconsequential back then.
No. And it was to be paid for by inheritance tax, okay? So the death tax.
Right.
tax
right.
on inherited property. So this has been talked about. So we've had systems, all of the systems have either failed or covered so few people that they might as well be failures, and there are many of them I've talked about. But our system, the social insurance program, the social insurance theory that began in the late 19th century and in the early 20th century and was implemented first in Germany and in Spain, and we adopted Social Security and Medicare to follow, have covered more people with better benefits than ever in our history. And we have our Social Security trust funds are still solvent. They're, in fact, they're still growing. The Social Security trust fund is growing and will peak out at $3 trillion by 2022. Wouldn't you like to have your hands on that, Tom?
Well, I know Pete Peterson would, or his buddies.
And it should be more. It should be more than that, but when the last of the baby boomers retire in 2028, that fund is going to deplete relatively rapidly by 2033. That doesn't mean Social Security is over. It just means that the benefits can only be paid by incoming FICA payroll taxes.
Right. It means we go back to Social Security, normal Social Security, and rather than a generation paying not only for its parents' retirement but also for its own, we go back to just people paying for their parents' retirement.
Right.
Paul, thank you for the call, and thank you for your cogent, lucid explanation. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Anything Goes Friday, back with your calls right after this. Twenty-eight minutes before the hour, Geraldo on Fox saying that because of the dash cam video showing Walter Scott running away from his car, that the police officer should be cleared of his murder charge. I can't make this stuff up. It's amazing. A guest walked off Hannity on the Walter Scott shooting. He had had enough of the victim blaming and just outright Hannity. And actually, he was walking off not in response to Sean, but to his guest, another one of the guests. And Rand Paul walked out of an interview with The Guardian today. It's you can see it at the top of The Guardian's website and other places as well. It's kind of hysterical. Is there some kind of epidemic? It's like, is the moon full? 28 minutes before the hour. Judy in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. Hey, Judy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Hold on a sec.
Sure.
I'll get you off a speaker. Hey, I'm with the IRS has had a tax help program for 48 years, and they partner with nonprofits around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with just finishing up my eighth year through the AARP tax aid, IRS trained and stuff. Anyway, long story short, I work in an area with a lot of retirees, and a man came in today, and I wasn't doing his return, but someone came over and asked me. He didn't get a flyer, but his sister did. And this is a man who has not had to file. He hasn't had sufficient taxable income requiring him to file a return for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a call from his sister who said she got some mailer who said that everyone has to file a tax return this year to prove they have health care. And I said, that's an absolute lie.
No, it's not true. It's not true.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I wasn't doing his return. I was busy with, another person there. So I didn't get in all the details. But I'd be kind of interested if any of your other listeners around the country have either gotten one of these or have heard about it. I wanted to see if it was a local phenomena, maybe some tax service around here doing that to build
could be, or
a business, or if it was,
could be a disinformation campaign funded by one of the people who hates the president and the idea
and also
that people can get healthy.
And I also want to apologize profusely for allowing Tom Cotton to get elected. I ran a campaign office on the Democratic side trying to do everything I could to fight that man. Wrote letters to the editor, sat in on his telephone town halls trying to figure out how he was lying to the people, which he was doing on a regular basis. And I just, he's been in the Senate just this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the Senate for 3 years. I heard him yesterday thinking he was in there a year and a half. But his 2 years in Congress was his first 2 years before he even got elected to the House in 2012. He was already campaigning against Mark Pryor.
Wow.
And we had, in 2011, 2012, we had the AFP buses rolling into Arkansas and Carl Rove sitting in Little Rock. So I knew we were in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, once the big money comes to town. And this is the reality of American politics. We no longer live in a democratic republic. We live in an oligarchy. And when the oligarchs, yeah. when the oligarchs twitch their fingers, politics trembles and politicians tremble. You're yeah. right. Judy, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing the information with us. Russ in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Russ, what's up?
Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to comment on the multitude of shootings we've had involving police officers. I'm a retired police officer.
Okay.
And I can say this, and I know this, difference between believing and knowing, again. The culture of police has been absorbed by a degree of militarism, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
The old police culture that I built my career on and people my age has disappeared. It's now been engulfed in the uniform, the stealth car, the financing, the allegiance to a bigger brother than what I was used to. And to say that most of these shootings are these beast cops, I've met a few of those clowns as far as people that will operate outside the law. But what's happening now is your moderately trained officer is drifting towards militarism. That's the problem. So that's my point, and instead of belaboring it further, I'll hang up and maybe discuss it.
Well, Russ, are you suggesting that because we have been throwing weapons of war at our domestic police departments in huge, at billion-dollar levels, the surplus stuff left over from Iraq and Afghanistan, other things that are just excuses to make, for more money for the defense contractors, that is creating a military mentality when these guys start dressing up like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and full battle.
To some degree, actually, the power of a general order, a policy procedure, is actually more influential than the toys they have that they used to not have. It's a shifting towards away from service as a police officer and towards authority.
What is a general order?
A general order is something that all municipal, state, sheriff departments, they all have a policy book. Everything from runaway apprehension to loose dogs or whatever. They have a policy.
Right.
And the policy for use of force has altered in most of these agencies to the point where these officers feel justified in using maximum authority in the I don't know if these officers aren't getting down. I hate to say it, but they're not wrestling these people enough. They're taking their weapon way out too soon and resorting to deadly force because their policy allows for it.
Mm.
Their policy allows for what eventually will be called, accurately, murder. And a lot of these people are going to get away with it.
Well, and we're doing this not just with the police forces. I mean, coming to a town near you, this is the story of brain fart. What's his name? The kid with the Skittles and the iced tea down in Florida?
Martin.
Yeah, Trayvon Martin. Yeah, I mean, George Zimmerman was able to essentially behave as a police officer, to use deadly force because of the stand your ground, shoot first laws.
Isn't that a terrible shame that the law exists in that state to that degree and that people are not only unapologetic for it, nobody's trying to repeal that law with any horsepower.
No, in fact, Alec is trying to promote.
Accepted.
Yeah, Alec and the NRA are trying to promote them into more and more states. Russ, thank you for the insight. I'm curious, did you hear my when we opened the show, my reading from the bulletin board from the Broward County or the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department where the police officers were talking to each other about how you hand, is it better to have a throwdown gun or is it better to have all that kind of thing?
I heard all of it.
Okay, is that kind of conversation totally unusual? Did that shock or surprise you as a former police officer? Or is that kind of conversation the stuff that actually goes on in police departments all across the country?
I've been retired 12 years. So in my world, emails didn't really exist among people.
Right.
I'm old school.
Right.
But conversations, it's a matter of degree rather than condition.
Right.
And to a degree that existed then, but now with the extra steroid of militarism, it's coming out. They don't care if you backtrack and find out that they're talking that way.
Right.
They have kind of a rubber stamp. So to answer your question, I think it's a matter of degree rather than condition.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that the end of the thread was not, oops, we need to scrub this thread or maybe we need to get our act together, but rather it was calling this guy a rat blanker and saying that they were going to hunt him down and when he needs a 94, he's not going to get it. What's a 94?
Well, that kind of code differs from almost county to county.
Okay, so presumably it's an officer in trouble, right?
It very well may be. That's what I took it as.
Yeah, that was my assumption. Russ, thank you for enlightening us and for calling and for listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. I appreciate it. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm with Lincoln Chafee on the Hillary thing, and I just want to warn all of the kind of middle-of-the-ground Democrats here. Hillary is a corporate Democrat, and we progressives are not going to tolerate voting for her. So don't count on us. Don't count on us. We are not going to, no matter what Satan the Republicans put up, not going to vote for Hillary. We want a true progressive.
Well, and I would love a true progressive too, Laura. But I will vote for Hillary Clinton if she's the Democratic Party's nominee. And knowing that she's a corporate Democrat, knowing also in 1932 when Franklin Roosevelt ran for president, he was a corporate Democrat. I believe that, you know, FDR rose to the occasion of the crisis of this country. I think that we're looking at some very serious crises coming up, both economic, international, and also, four Supreme Court justices being over 80 years old when the next president takes office. And I don't want there to be even a remote chance that a Republican is in the White House. That will change the nature of this country. Those Supreme Court appointments will change the nature of this country for the next 30, 40, 50 years. And I'm not willing to take that chance. But I understand your perspective, and I would love to see more progressives in the race to move Hillary to the left. I am hopeful that she will wake up. But like I said, you know, FDR presided as the governor of New York State from 1928 to 1932. He oversaw New York as part of the old machine, and what was it, Boss Tweed machine? In fact, he was being investigated for it. But he stood up.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The thing that FDR knew how to do from day one was how to take names, kick ass, and use power, because he'd done so as the governor of New York. I think that's true of Hillary Clinton, too. Welcome back. And Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. A few weeks ago, I heard you say that you'd never run into a white person that had been warned by other white people to be cautious of the police. Well, you're talking to one right now.
Okay. Your parents cautioned you?
Back in 1985, when I went to work at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory down in Los Angeles County, I was warned by the other white people I was working with to be very careful of the police. If they pull you over, keep your hands on the steering wheel, because the police will shoot you if you are fidgeting around in the car and they don't know what you're doing.
Wow.
I was especially warned about the Los Angeles County sheriffs, that they are especially crazy. And even more so than the Los Angeles County sheriff, I was warned about the San Bernardino County sheriffs, that they are.
They are words you can't say on the air, crazy. I think we just lost Ed. Ed, I can't hear you if you can hear me, but, I got the message. Steve in Simi Valley, California. Hey, Steve. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. First, a quick note on Lincoln Chafee. He was the only Republican to vote against the Iraq War in 2004.
Right. The only guy with good sense on that side.
There you go. What I want to talk to you about, you know how when you debate our friends on the right about the gap between the rich and the poor, and the argument they use is, well, you're advocating class warfare. And basically what I tell them when they say that, I say, well, why not? Because you're the ones that fired the first shot in 1981 with Reaganomics and lowering the marginal tax rate and passing the cost on to the lower class and trying to eliminate unions and eradicate workers' rights.
Yep.
Okay, so
Warren Buffett said it, Steve. He said there is a class war in this country going on, and my class is winning.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that you felt I was on the right track by using that argument.
Yeah. Good one. Thank you very much, Steve. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Jesse in Miami, Florida, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, I'll try to make this quick. I think everybody know the cancer that's in the world today. You need to have $8,000 to be buried. You need $30,000 to be born, $100,000 to get to the age 18. So how do modern journalists overcome this class warfare that the 99% don't know they in or what to do about it? I mean, really, what to do about it? The only thing I would say, if I was a journalist, would tell them, just like the Move Your Money campaign that you helped started, went to an end to people just moving their money to a credit union or a community bank. I think I would report a story, say, look, the Shiite is going against the Sunni, black is going against white, Muslim against Christian. What do they all have in common? They all need to have a way to make a living without having money. So the whole world, each country need to take over their central bank, start printing money, and start reacting like them beautiful kids did in Hurricane Sandy when they went to help the people and says, where's the government? We here to help you. Who's paying you?
There you go, Joseph. There you go. Thank you for the call. 10 minutes before the hour. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan, Danielle Gilday, and Troy Miller, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to writer-researchers Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the groups that syndicate our program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, others around the country, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room. Hey, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Seriously, thank you. Rick in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Rick, what's up? Rick, you are on the air. I think maybe Rick just tried to take it off mute and push the hang-up button. Give us a shout back, Rick. Eric in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi, yeah, you're on the air.
All right, thank you for taking my call. I want to ask a couple of questions here about our about economics. We got two things here. We've got the question about the minimum wage, number one.
Right.
Number two, we've got the question about increasing Social Security benefits.
Right.
Now, it seems to me that whenever we talk about these things, conservatives and the Republicans like to say, we can't afford it. You know, that's the normal argument. But you never hear any actual facts. So the question is facts. And they say, a mom-and-pop store can't afford it. And, it'll increase the costs. But I would like to hear... I would like to hear one McDonald's owner come up and say, if we increased our minimum wage from X to Y, how much it would increase our costs, and say how much it would increase the cost of a burger or the cost of a bag of fries, 5 cents, 10 cents, whatever.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't get anybody to say, I couldn't afford that. I won't go to eat there anymore.
Right. Well, and not only that, that's assuming that all of the cost, the added labor cost, gets passed into the product rather than, that labor cost being taken out of dividends or being taken out of CEO salaries or senior executive salaries, things like that. But the other point that could be made with this, Eric, and brilliant of you to tie these together, is that 100% of the wages that are subject to the minimum wage are taxable for Social Security. Even though people earning the minimum wage make so little they don't pay income tax, they do pay payroll tax. 100% of their pay is taxed for Social Security through the payroll tax. And so if their pay goes up, then the revenue that goes into Social Security goes up. So if you have across the nation a substantial increase in the minimum wage, you know, from $7 to $10, you're going to see a substantial increase in the amount of revenue going into Social Security, to the point that, in my opinion, it would probably solve much, if not all, of this of the possible shortfall, you know, a generation down the road. Make sense?
Okay. Yes, it does. And actually, regarding the question of Social Security and the increase of benefits, well, they always like to say, it's unsustainable.
Right.
Well, what they mean is it's unsustainable under the current structure.
Yeah.
But anybody who's got any sense about the structure of Social Security would understand that, you know, you do a little minimum of tinkering, you know, especially at the top end of the income structure. And Social Security can be easily fixed.
Right. Your problem is instantly and easily solved.
It's not unsustainable.
Yeah.
It may be unsustainable now when they don't want to, you know, if you say the word tax, then, we'll take you out and shoot you.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Very well said, Eric. Thank you for the call, and thanks for making the point. John, in Lenoir, is it Lenoir or Lenoir City, Tennessee? How do you say it? Lenoir? John? John, you're not listening to your telephone. You got to listen to the phone. There's a delay. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Norm? I just wanted to get back to, you know, what the president had mentioned about mandatory voting, you know?
Right.
And now we're losing our democracy if we haven't lost it already, because with these oligarchs in control and power of the democratic process is supposed to be of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Maine, thank you for the call. Well said. Bill, driving through Ohio. Hey, Bill, increasing the cost of a hamburger?
Yeah.
Has that math been done?
I used to be a manager at McDonald's. Now, this is going back 30 years, but I've done the math on this. And without getting into the hairy details of it, the increase in the cost of a small hamburger or cheeseburger comes out to about 0.8 cents.
Wow. So if we paid McDonald's workers a living wage, you know, minimum ten.
That's based on going from $7.25 to $10.
Right. So if we paid them an absolute minimum wage, that's really not even a living wage. A living wage is $15 an hour. But if we paid them $10 an hour, the cost of a hamburger goes up less than a penny. That's, you know, it's not surprising. And that kind of math, the workers need to, somebody needs to work that math out and frame the argument using that, because it's such a good point. Thank you for that. Jose in, oh, we only have to say what? 15 seconds. I'm sorry, Jose. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to, it wouldn't be fair to you to put you on the air for 12 seconds. This has been a very consequential week here in the United States. And, you know, you can only see tipping points in the rearview mirror. You know, you can only look back and see these moments. But with regard to racial justice in this country, I believe that we are at a tipping point. It's a generational tipping point, not a month tipping point, or maybe even a year tipping point. We're seeing profound changes. And with regard to race, with regard to gender equality and gender identity equality, with all of these issues, and now we've got this presidential race starting to heat up, it's starting to get real interesting. So I'm looking forward to talking to you next week. With Hillary as a candidate, what would you like to hear from her? Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.